the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
You're very welcome back. We will be talking the week trending with Orla Ryan and Kieran Cunningham in just a moment. But let's go to some breaking news that we got just after the headlines at 5pm, which is that Daniel Kinahan has been arrested in the United Arab Emirates. Stephen Breen is crime editor with The Sun and has written many books about the Kinahan family. Stephen, can first of all, can you bring us up to speed on what's happened here? Because as I understand it, this arrest happened in Dubai a couple of days ago.
Yeah, good evening, Will. I think this is an extraordinary development in relation to the Gardaí's ongoing efforts to target the Kinahan organised crime group. As we know, many senior members of that group are already in prison, but you know the investigations were continuing, and that was primarily targeting the head of that organisation, and that was Daniel Kinahan. So the Gardaí were hoping to charge him in relation to two incidents. One was in relation to participation and directing the activities of a organised crime gang on two occasions during the Kinahan and Hutch feud. And those investigations have been going on for quite some time. There have been a lot of serious negotiations taking place between the government and also between the Garda and National Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau. And as a result of those investigations and those negotiations and an extradition treaty being signed between Ireland and Dubai, that culminated then just this week in the arrest of Daniel Kinahan from his home in Dubai.
And what's happened recently on this one, so as we understand it, Daniel Kinahan and Christy Kinahan Jr. have been in Dubai for some time. We're not sure if that was 2019, mm-hmm. 2020. There was definitely public appearances by Daniel Kinahan a couple of years ago in the United Arab Emirates as well. And the understanding was that he was still there. I believe there was an investigative report about a month ago by the Sunday Times, which had pinned down that he was still in Dubai. So this all seems to be related that in recent times they've discovered that he was still operating out of there.
Yeah, well, there have been many reports over the years since 2016, towards the end of 2016, when they left Ireland for Dubai, when they left Spain. And there have been many reports over the years that they may have gone to Russia, they may have gone to Africa and other countries. But it was always the Gardaí's belief over the last 10 years that they had remained in Dubai. You had that Sunday Times report last month, although that was from last September, showing Daniel Kinahan quite publicly at a mixed martial arts event as well. So the guards have always maintained that they have stayed in Dubai. They haven't gone anywhere else. And because of their negotiations and because of their interactions with the Dubai authorities, you know, they have continued these investigations. And as a result of that, and as a result of the DPP now deciding that there is enough evidence to charge Daniel Kinahan in relation to the Kinahan-Hutch feud, that's why the negotiations continued and the high-level meetings continued, and it's resulted in Daniel Kinahan's arrest.
And Stephen, just in terms of how it's going to progress from here, so I'm just reading the quotes from the Gardaí that they've given to the media here, where they say they're aware of the arrest, but it's a matter right now for the authorities in the Emirates as opposed to here. So how is this likely now to proceed for the Gardaí, given that this arrest warrant had come from Irish courts?
Yeah. Well, it's the same as what happened with Sean McGovern. And I think that the Sean McGovern case was a template where it showed that, you know, the authorities in Dubai were prepared and determined to target members of the Kinahan organised crime group. When he was arrested, he was held in a Dubai prison for a number of months. It's the same as it was if a European arrest warrant had been issued. He did have the opportunity to challenge that extradition. I imagine Daniel Kinahan will do the same. He will have the opportunity to challenge the legality of the arrest warrant that has been issued, and he will remain in custody in Dubai until as the time comes when that process has been exhausted, and then it'll be up to the authorities in Dubai if he is to be extradited to Ireland. And then when that decision is made, then obviously the programme will be put in place to bring him back here.
Stephen Breen, many thanks for joining us on The Last Word. Kieran Cunningham, can't have a quiet weekend. Here was me thinking the 5 o'clock news is over. Three of us going to have a nice chat about the week trending and a bit of sport between 6 and 7. And then, out of nowhere, a news drop that Daniel Kinahan has been arrested. That warrant has been out for quite some time. This search has been going on for quite some time. And this is kind of a remarkable development in the story as well.
Yeah, no, it is. It is one of those news alerts that stops you in your tracks. You know, you don't really... Because at times it reminded me of COVID when people, you know, they're always in the next 2 weeks are crucial. Mm. The amount of times you would hear that the net is closing on the Kinahans. But that's the nature of it, and particularly the nature of the way UAE operates. I think it is a slow process. And I do think the Sunday Times investigation in conjunction with Bellingcat that showed them pictured at an MA, Christy and Daniel Kinahan pictured at an MMA event so openly. I think that did embarrass the authorities there, and I think that could have had an influence on what has unfolded now. But it's interesting because one of the stories we were supposed to talk about later on is the possibility of Katie Taylor fighting at Croke Park. And the reason there wasn't professional boxing here for so long was because of Daniel Kinnan's involvement in the sport. And you could have the situation where the build-up to that fight, if it happens in the autumn, is dominated by Jerry Hutch running for election again and the situation with Daniel Kinnan's arrest.
Yeah, or it wasn't the way I intended to start by segueing this into Croke Park and Katie Taylor and Eddie Hearn going to meet the GAA and Croke Park officials today. We haven't had a statement from Eddie Hearn just yet, but he's been speaking a little bit in the last day or two. I don't know personally if this fight's going to happen, because as optimistic as some people have been that it could eventually happen, and Katie Taylor has played the emotional card by saying, this is my last year, it's now or never when it comes to Croke Park. Eddie Hearn has always balked at the idea of actually paying the rent for this to happen.
Yeah, so basically she's always said, as you say, Katie said, it's my dream to end my career here. I've always wanted to fight here and this would be a perfect ending to my career. But as you say, there's no update from those talks just yet, but many people were really hopeful it goes ahead. You know, there was talk during the week that perhaps she'd play second fiddle to a men's match at Croke Park because it would be so costly to rent the stadium. You know, that's since been, you know, put to bed. They've said, no, if she's playing, she'll be the headliner, and rightly so. But yeah, we're just waiting to see if there's any white smoke from there, but no developments yet.
Kieran, anytime I've spoken to Peter McKenna, who I think was very upfront, the last time that Eddie Hearn went to talk to him was that they have got a fee at Croke Park. We will take our rental fee. This is the same fee if you came to rent it from any major sport, and they're not going to drop it because of the emotion or some kind of idea of emotional blackmail. But it's Katie Taylor, so you should do it cheaper, or the government should be covering Matchroom's side of this. I don't think either of those two scenarios happen.
Yeah, but it is more complicated dealing with professional boxing for Croke Park and for the GAA and for what they say they stand for than it is with other events that they've hosted, in that you look at the two professional fights Katie Taylor's had in Dublin against Chantelle Cameron. Chantelle Cameron's managed by Anthony Fitzpatrick, who was living in Daniel Kinnan's house that was seized and sold by the Criminal Assets Bureau. He has no criminal convictions, there's no suggestion to be involved in criminality, but he's a very close associate of Kinnan, and he was a senior figure in MTK Global, Kinnan's management company. You look back, Eddie Hearn was largely responsible in the run-up to the first Taylor-Cameron fight of having Conor McGregor front and centre. And as big a part of the week as Katie Taylor was, which was... So I think because of that, Croke Park will be quite wary. Like, they won't agree. I don't think they'll agree before they know who the opponent is and who the connections to the opponent are. Because the way boxing operates, there are a lot of figures you don't want to be getting into bed with.
Yeah. It would be unfortunate for Katie Taylor if it doesn't happen. I mean, maybe it finishes in 3 rounds instead.
Yeah, but I do think that, but I do see that. But I've been to a few big boxing events at Stadia. It's crap. It's really rubbish. It looks great on TV, but when you're there... they're little dots in the middle of the field, like, and you view up in the stand. Like, boxing is made for halls and arenas, maximum, I think, 10,000 people. That's where it really works. But so many people would want... Like, I bought tickets because my son wanted to go for the last Taylor fight in Dublin on the day for the 3 arena. They were still on sale on the day. So it's a big reach to sell Croke Park, but I think Eddie Hearn is good at selling tickets. And when you build it up so much, there's Katie Taylor's last fight and the people look on it as a national occasion, a national celebration, you probably would sell it out.
Okay. Micheál Martin seems to have come through the week, Orla. He was very defiant when he was speaking in Berlin. He said, look, I don't feel like I'm under pressure here. The backbenchers can come out and say what they want, but I'm still in charge of the party. I'm still in charge of the country. Does it seem he's got through the storm?
Yeah, it really does. And to be fair, people might be thinking, you know, if they had a euro for every time there was a mini heave or an attempted heave against Micheál Martin, we'd all have maybe 10 or 20 euro. But this all started the other day. People might remember there was a letter by 3 young backbench TDs, James O'Connor, Ryan O'Mara and Albert Dolan, and they were kind of critical of how Micheál Martin had handled the fuel protests, and they were saying, you know, maybe we need to look at potentially a new leadership, or they were concerned about the direction of the party. And this was given more credence when Willie O'Dea and Seán O'Farrell, 2 much more senior TDs, said, yeah, we need to have a conversation about this. So some of my colleagues yesterday, on the back of this, they got in touch with all Fianna Fáil TDs. Now, 22 of the 48 responded, and they basically all said they wouldn't back a motion of no confidence in him, that they were supporting Micheál Martin, and essentially any such motion would need 25 TDs to back it. So he was almost there. And then obviously others didn't reply. But even since then, more ministers have come out, including Jim O'Callaghan today, who many people would see as a potential successor, perhaps the most obvious successor to Micheál Martin, if and when that happens. So essentially, it looks like it was a storm in a teacup, and it's kind of business as usual for Micheál Martin.
Yeah, because Kieran Malcolm Byrne interviewed me yesterday, and he was kind of saying, look, they've got to a point where maybe reform of the party or the reform of the way things are done should be what comes from this, I won't even call it a heave, maybe discontent that's happening among the backbenchers. But the reality is, there's nobody really in Fianna Fáil who's ready to be the anointed successor just yet. It might be different if there was.
Yeah, like you've had talk in recent months about Jim O'Callaghan, but he's actually only been a minister for a very short space of time, and a TD for only a short space of time. So there's nobody that jumps out. Like, as things stand, he's one of the longest serving leaders of Fianna Fáil. I think it does mean such a big deal to them when the EU presidency, when their term comes around, that there's no way they're going to be a bit of upheaval now. And I think he probably still has a bit of goodwill within the party for the chaos after
COVID.
After the banking crisis, Fianna Fáil were on the floor, and he was a part in building it back up. But there's so much discontent out there, and a lot of it is kind of unfocused anger. And politicians trying to react to that, I'm not sure is healthy, because often it is unfocused. Like, there is no, people struggle to articulate why they are so angry or what they're, they seem to be angry about everything all the time.
I think that's true of a lot of things right now, not just politics. But I wanted to play this because people, you may well have heard, Pete Hegseth this week explains that this prayer by SAR to search and rescue crews ahead of missions. So it seemed as if, this is very, very clever, and he's using a bit of Bible verse, and then unfortunately for him, basically it was the scene from Pulp Fiction that everyone remembers. Have a quick listen.
So the prayer is CSAR 25:17, and it reads, and pray with me, please. The path of the downed aviator is beset on all sides by the iniquities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men. Blessed is he who, in the name of camaraderie and duty, shepherd the lost through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to capture and destroy my brother. And you will know my call sign is Sandy One, when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Amazing. And here's, if that sounds familiar, here's why.
Ezekiel 25, Ezekiel 25:17. The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the iniquities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men. Blessed is he who, in the name of charity and goodwill, shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
So I'm glad that actually all the swearing happened just after that, for the sake of the production team, that they didn't have to bleep everything out. But I'm not sure what the American fighter pilot was thinking while this was being read out and quoted incorrectly from the Bible.
I think we're just sort of beyond satire at this point and living in some kind of horrible simulation, and we're all going to wake up soon and it's going to be fine. I was in the newsroom yesterday and some colleague kind of piped up and said, so Pete Hegseth's just quoted the Bible, but it's actually Pulp Fiction. And everyone was like, okay, clarity. Let's explain what just happened. And obviously the clip there does it. I think Hegseth has since tried to play it down and say it was an entirely intentional, that he knew it was from Pulp Fiction. But I'm sure someone in the office got a bit of a bollocking potentially over that. It's, we laugh about it and it's funny. The particular quote's funny, but given the amount of people who've died in Iran in the last few weeks, it's over 3,600. A further 2,600 people have been killed in Lebanon. 1.2 million people within Lebanon are displaced. So it would be funny if it wasn't for the fact that an awful lot of people have died. And Pete Hegseth, among other people, including Trump himself, comparing himself to Jesus, Hegseth and other people have said that it's God's will that what they are doing in Iran. So I think that will, rub people up the wrong way, to put it mildly. Particularly Christians, a number of Christians have come out and said, you know, there's blasphemy at play. There's a lot of controversy as well around Hegseth's tattoos. People might remember there was, you know, controversy a couple of years ago when he's pictured in the gym and a lot of his tattoos were visible. And one of them says Deus Vult, which is God wills it. And it's, you know, supposed to be a cry of the Crusaders when the Crusaders were trying to reclaim, so to speak, land from Muslims over 1,000 years ago. So Hegseth has said quite openly that he believes it's God's will, and essentially that it's okay to go in there and to kill people who are Muslim. So obviously they say they have other reasons for it, but he's been very clear that he believes it's God's will. And people might remember as well, just after the US started their bombing campaign in Iran in late February, there was a picture of Trump in the Oval Office and he was surrounded by people in the administration and Christian preachers who all sort of had their hands on each other's shoulders. And he tweeted, or Truth Social, something to the effect of, like, you know, God is with us and this is God's plan kind of thing. Mm. So while some evangelicals in the US have kind of come out and said, yes, we agree, this is God's plan, many other people have said, you know, it's incredibly offensive to say you're doing this in the name of anyone's God.
I'm not having it, Kieran, that he did this deliberately. He did that way too earnestly with the way that he was giving the speech for this to have been, you know, it's actually Jules from Pulp Fiction. That was not done in a jokey way.
No, well, I've always been a Marxist, enthralled to Groucho Marx rather than Karl.
Right.
And the only response is to quote Groucho. I think he might look like an idiot and talk like an idiot, but don't let that fool you. He really is an idiot.
Succinctly put. But yeah, there's absolutely no way that he was tongue-in-cheek when he was saying that whatsoever. That was delivered with pure sincerity to the point that I presume someone turned around and goes, actually, your speechwriter has just used Quentin Tarantino as opposed to the word of God.
Well, I also wouldn't rule out AI. Because I've seen quite a few speeches lately, and it's clear somebody gave a few prompts and they're just reading out a spiel of rubbish on their phone. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
I wouldn't be, and there's a very good chance that on ChatGPT, and I'm sure there are other AI available that could be writing these speeches for you, will probably very quickly pull up a passage like that as well. If you put in something about keeping people safe when they're on missions, that could well have come up. So either way... Could I ask you about the propaganda, Orla, as well, that's going on at the moment? So, again, this is something people have seen online. It's been memed and re-memed, and I don't know. The way that wars are conducted now is very different in terms of the correspondence to what they would have been once upon a time. They're no longer telegraphs to each other to explain, this is a declaration of war, this is what's going to happen to you if you bomb our territory. It's now, we will lampoon you with Lego, which is what Iran have been doing to the Trump administration.
Yeah, it's been very interesting to watch this. And again, it would probably seem ridiculous or humorous if it wasn't so serious. But, you know, there's always been propaganda in war. And, you know, people have said in recent days, like, you used to know when you were looking at propaganda, whereas now if there's a funny video with Lego characters or whatever it might be, people kind of laugh at it. But a number of social media accounts based in Iran or backed by Iran have basically been sharing, you know, either Lego figures or other kind of caricatures of Trump and Netanyahu and other people kind of as ridiculous people, who some people may think they are ridiculous people, but in these kind of scenarios. For example, we mentioned earlier the fact that Trump, you know, shared that AI image of himself as Jesus Christ, and then he actually deleted it a few hours later.
One of the rare time downs.
One of the very rare time downs. And I've been live blogging a lot this week about the war in Iran, and one of the jobs tied to that, sadly, is keeping an eye on his Truth Social feed. And like the speed at which he you know, tweets the wrong term, but that he posts on that is really something else, this kind of stream of consciousness, and it is utterly bizarre at a lot of times. But when he tweeted that the other day, obviously there was uproar, and some people who have really rode in behind him have said, you know, this was blasphemy, this is not okay. But on the back of that, one of the videos that the, you know, the Iranian bots or whatever you want to call them, that they shared was basically, it started off as the same video where Trump comes in as Christ and is like healing a man or whatever he's supposed to be doing. Then actual Jesus appears and kind of rips him apart and throws him down to the depths of hell. So there's all of these kind of, you know, strange AI videos doing the rounds right now. Some are meant to be more humorous than others. There's another one where Trump is depicted as like a bad DJ, and they're doing all these kind of silly things to basically mock him and make him look foolish, because when he comes out and says things about, you know, peace deals or whatever it might be, Iran is basically saying, we don't take you seriously, we're mocking you, we think you're a fool. And it kind of is, even unconsciously, maybe people going into people's brains of like, oh, you know, the Iranians, like, you know, maybe some people over there, you know, they're more liberal than we think, or some of the leadership or whatever it might be. I think they're trying to kind of, you know, there's this go into people's consciousness in that way. And it's interesting to watch. And obviously, because there's this focus on, you know, memes and kind of fun online, I think it's worth pointing out that a lot of people in Iran still don't have internet access. And there was obviously that massive blackout at the start of the year, during which time tens of thousands of people were killed. So while it's kind of ha-ha funny what they're doing, it's also, you know, it's a brutal regime over there.
Yeah, look, that's the thing. I don't necessarily associate fun with fundamentalist regimes, Kieran, when it comes to what's coming out of Iran. These are individuals, albeit if they are backed by the leadership still at the same time. There's so much repression around creativity in Iran right now. I'm not sure this is coming from the very top brass.
No, but there is a tradition of creativity within Iran. Like it's a very strong film industry for years. Like a lot of celebrated films have come out of it, and music too. But I think this can be very effective in terms of propaganda. And even, like, you wouldn't remember, you're too young, but there was a show called Hall's Pictorial Weekly in the 70s.
I've heard about
it, Minister for Finance at the time was a good guy called Richie Ryan. But they used to caricature him as Richie Ruin, the Minister for Hardship. And effectively, it finished his political career. And spitting image then in the 80s, which had puppets in the UK, there were some politicians that never recovered, particularly Neil Kinnock, the way he was portrayed. And even Steve Davis, a snooker player, because he was calling himself Steve Interesting Davis. He was trying to come up with a nickname because he was seen as so boring and dull. But it actually, I interviewed Steve Davis a few years ago, and it had an effect on him. And
so many people say that they were effective.
Satire and that can be very insidious and very effective.
Yeah. Indeed. And that's why Steve Davis became a DJ. And now he's cool and interesting. I see him on TV and so on as well. Orla, Kieran, many thanks for joining us to take a look back at the week's stories and the week trending.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.